Welcome to the Property Premier League, the weekly podcast where property meets Premier League football. I'm your host, Chris Mervin, and joining me are my co-hosts, Steve Green and Jamie Asplund. Each week, we'll dive into the world of property and football from the unique perspective of professionals who live and breathe both. As diehard fans of Spurs, Palace and Everton, we know a thing or two about the highs and lows that come with both the beautiful game and the property market. Whether it's the thrill of a last-minute goal or the challenges of a market shift, we've got the stories, insights and banter to keep you entertained. So if you're passionate about property, Premier League football or both, you're in the right place. Get ready for the weekly dose of all things property and football with the Property Premier League. Let's kick off. Hello, Jamie is not available for today's podcast, but Steve is back from his travels. Hi, Steve. Welcome back, buddy.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. You've got to, obviously, for people who can't see the video, which we didn't post, Steve did have his cowboy hat on, which he purchased from some roadside establishment in the US, back from his travels. And today's guest, really excited to have you on here, is David Agus, buy-to-let and bridging specialist. David's a managing director of 360 Mortgages down here in Plymouth, where I'm from. And more importantly, he is a Spurs fan. And before you say it, Steve, yes, I found the other one. Come on, you Spurs. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're right, buddy. So,
yeah, good.
Mate, just give us a bit of a brief sort of overview about what you do just in general without going into too much detail. And then obviously the main important reason about being a Spurs fan, really, how you became a Spurs fan. Go for it.
Absolutely. So I think first off, really, I'm a property investor. I've got my own portfolio of rental properties.
Nice.
Spanning South Wales and Plymouth. Mixture of sort of single lets, flats, blocks of flats. My background, aside from property, was sort of finance, banking, and a bit of sales. So, I don't know, 10 years ago nearly, I started 360 Mortgages, mostly off the back of trying to solve my own mortgage issues as a property investor. So naturally, our specialism at 360 Mortgages is to kind of work with landlords, property investors, and more investment side of mortgages rather than sort of residential. We do a bit of that as well, but the focus is anything investment based.
Nice. How come you sat South Wales? I didn't know about that actually. Are you from there originally or just saw an opportunity?
No, it was probably when I first started buying property and I was looking for areas where I could buy relatively cheap. Tons of stock that was relatively similar. So you've got the rows and rows of old miners' cottages up there. Could travel there and back in a day. And was cheap. So I think we did about 6 in 18 months up there. Buy them cheap, spend a load on a refurb, and then refinance and roll it into the next one. So that refurbish, refinance strategy.
I do know somebody who, they did have a lot of properties like very similar. And they actually ended up buying a couple of different rows and had it as an ongoing sort of tenancy, sort of income generator. And I think they were approached a few times for people to say, from outside the area, say, okay, can I buy it? Can I buy all those blocks, that block together? Yeah. So actually, then the prices he was buying the stuff for, they would make you blush down here. They really would. They were crazy prices.
Absolutely. I mean, when we were buying up there 10, 12 years ago, it was probably, I think the cheapest we bought was a 3-bed terrace house for 20,000. We had to spend 35.
3 or 4 years ago, that's 1999 prices, isn't it? Crikey.
No, 10, 12 years ago. This is
10, 12
probably,
years, okay.
Yeah, 2010, 2012. Most expensive was 50, spent less on that. But I think in terms of South Wales, the only real comparable areas to that is probably sort of north of England. And it just wasn't viable travelling up there and back in a day from Plymouth. I'd have had to take 3 days out of life back here to do that.
Nice. Is that market still there, Dave, in Wales for being really cheap?
Yeah, I think it is. I don't think it's as lucrative as it was. It's one of those areas where a lot of property investors will flock to for that very reason. You know, you can do the buy, refurbish, refinance. If you get it right, you can leave no money in them and just roll your deposits and your refurb money through into the next one. Naturally, I think that has probably increased the demand and pushed the prices up. But I think the whole market's changed in terms of that strategy. You know, if you can get a deal now where you leave nothing in, it's a golden egg, isn't it? It doesn't really happen too often. The more money you're happy to leave in, I guess the faster you'll grow a portfolio.
Good advice from the start, no doubt, as well. Steve, Dave, what about Spurs then? How did you become, I can say it in your voice anyway, are you from that way originally? Or?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in North London, Field. My dad used to live on Northumberland Park, other end of Northumberland Park, just around the corner from the end of Park Lane. So as a kid, he was a Spurs fan. Him and his mum and dad had season tickets. As a kid for myself, I had to be a Spurs fan because it was in the family blood. But it was local as well. They were, I guess, the biggest first-tier team closest to where I lived. Probably spent more time as a teenager though watching Barnet play because it's cheaper to go. But we did go down to Tottenham whenever we could.
Nice, nice. Fantastic.
So I'll pass that on now, and my two boys are Spurs fans too, so there was two more.
That's cool. That's cool, though, that tradition has followed, definitely. They haven't gone anywhere else.
Absolutely.
It's always the risk of if you're North London and your dad supports Spurs that they're going to be turned.
Yeah. No, I've seen too many other families where the kids support the rivals just to get at them.
Yeah, well, it's a bit like Everton and Liverpool in some respects as well. There's quite a few of them you sort of mix together, and they are different family members support different sides, I guess. So, crikey. And just a general overview of how we'd... Obviously, I couldn't not ask this with a Spurs fan on. How are you feeling currently, where we are in the league, where we are in general, I guess, really?
Well, I think you've got to be pleased with where we are in the league. If you're just looking at purely position, we're in the Champions League, we're riding fairly high in the league, although a couple of recent results have probably slipped down a little bit, but it's all quite tight. It's still early days. But it's typical life of the Spurs fan, isn't it? You don't want to get too excited. A long season ahead of us.
It's almost like we've got a leash on us, isn't it? You sort of get carried away, you put your arms up and you're running away going, yay! And then it pulls you back like, reality. This won't last forever.
We've been here before. Yeah, we've been here before.
You've got to be
happy. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what, we're sitting in sixth. No one's really gone unbeaten now, have they? Everyone has lost the game by the looks of it, I think.
Yeah.
It may be one or two losses in there. They're questionable, maybe one or two draws, but that's just Spurs, isn't it? It's what we do.
Yeah, definitely.
For that.
Yeah, I'm trying to not... Is that still a thing? Well, I guess it'll always stick. Steve, just because you won again at the weekend.
It's definitely a thing on the hand.
It's a boring
fixture,
isn't it, that one?
Right, let's go and chat about last weekend's results then, if we can do. I don't really want to speak about Spurs, but we have to, because that's just the way we are. But what we can do is, of course, go way back to Saturday. Did we have a match on Friday on that one? Yes, we did, didn't we?
Who was it?
We didn't. That's fine. Ignore that. So Saturday, we had Brighton against Leeds. I thought this would be a bit closer, but Jamie, who was on here last week, quite rightly said that Leeds away from home, he didn't fancy them. And it turned out that way, really. Brighton running 3-0 winners, and they didn't really look in... I don't know if anybody saw the highlights on that. Didn't really look in any trouble from what I saw. They were pretty okay. And Danny Welbeck scoring again. Unbelievable.
What was he now? 34, 35?
He's in his 60s, isn't he? Christ. I don't know. It seems like he's been around, one of those players who's been around for a long, long time and almost had appearances for every club in the Premier League. You know, he's one of those types of players, isn't he?
And he scores goals.
Yeah, but I mean... Reisha's on him, yeah. From what I saw, again, pressing was really important. Brighton, they had the best chances as well. And yeah, I don't think the Leeds defence did themselves any real great points, really, from what I saw.
I was looking at the stats here. They had 14 shots, Brighton, 7 on target against Leeds, 5 and 2 on targets.
That's a good ratio, isn't it? For 2-1. 50. Yeah, yeah. Good ratio.
Brighton are a funny side this season. They get started and then they kind of bounce back a bit and then they get started again. Yeah, not like I'm complaining being a Palace fan. As long as they stay below Palace, I'm happy.
Are they your team? You know,
they are the team that it's a massive rivalry. It's a huge rivalry. It goes back to, the 80s or the 70s or whatever. We had a manager, he went to Brighton, we lost to Brighton. He threw a whole load of 2p's at the Palace crowd and said, that's all you're worth. And it all kicked off from there. Essentially, Millwall is closer, a lot closer. Brighton. But Brighton tends to be our biggest rivalries for that reason. So it's a bit of a weird rivalry. I've been to some Palace, Brighton Palace games are worse. Yeah, I can tell you some stories about that another time. Not nice.
Let's get the legal thing set up first, so make sure we have.
Yeah, we will.
Okay, fair enough. Burnley, Arsenal, Burnley at home, Arsenal winning 2-0, and again, we thought this would be, I think we did actually say 2-0, so very similar to that, to be honest, last week. So again, extending the lead, Gokorez and I'd never had to say his name, to be honest, and Declan Rice scoring. Decent unbeaten in 12 games in all competitions, Arsenal. Yeah,
it's
just
frustrating,
again,
isn't it?
Ticking along. They're just ticking along. It is frustrating. It really is. But again, give them their dues. Give them the dues. They are, you know.
This is the season though, isn't it? Like I could see them potentially winning it as long as they don't bottle it right at that last minute or get injuries. But they seem, like we said it before, I think they seem to have got strength and depth now. So and Saka's not necessarily the main man all the time.
No. I did have some conversations on WhatsApp about, with obviously Spurs fans, no Arsenal fans, obviously all the time, you tend to keep in touch with him as well. And I had a bit of back and forth with one in particular, and he was, oh yeah, we'll be okay, we'll get a first or second, you know. And I'm like, what? Second will be a failure, wouldn't it? Surely second will be a failure for him. He needs to push on. Like we said this before, in a previous cast, we've actually gone through and seen what is failure for Arsenal in particular. And I think it is failure. You got, win it. It's all there for you. If you do it, you're doing a Spurs. There you go. I'll leave it out there.
Particularly after this start as well.
But I think I forget, man. Six points clear, aren't they, at top now?
Yeah, but here comes City. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Then we had Palace at home against Brentford, and we all thought Palace were going to do okay with this. I mean, Brentford, they've had a good little run, to be honest. That's a good result again. Palace are... they're consistent, they're structured well, and they've got some sort of fight behind them as well, haven't they, Steve?
Well, yeah, last year we lost to Brentford twice. They did a double over us, 2-1 at ours and 2-1 at theirs. So if you'd said to me last week on the podcast, what's the score going to be? I probably would have said a draw, to be honest. So yeah, I would take 2-0. Brentford didn't, I don't think they had anything on target, to be honest. Well, sorry, I tell a lie. Two shots on target, but they weren't in it the whole time. So Mateta scores again, which is great. I know Jay, he messages me all the time going, your man scored again. But when you're a Palace fan, you look at him, and I'm watching him all the time, he doesn't do a lot throughout the game. And then all of a sudden, he'll pop up and scoop a header over the top of the goalkeeper, or he just takes his chances. Yeah, for the rest of the game, he was just kind of, yeah, not really there. 2-0, the fixture congestion is going to do us in December. It's ridiculous. Have you seen what we've got in 10 days?
Yeah, well, I think
we're playing a game every other day.
Yeah, most clubs are going to be up to the same. It's crazy. It's crazy. And you need your whole squad there. And yeah, I do worry. I mean, Spurs have started now losing a few players and then get little niggles and then coming back a few games later. So it's going to be interesting. And you need luck, don't you? You do need luck to win a league as well.
You do. Like, it could really derail us. And then we've got the African Cup of Nations in January, where we're going to lose a couple of players there.
How many are you losing? Because Kudos isn't going, which, well, I know he's injured at the moment, but he's not going because they haven't qualified, thank God. But we're losing Sarr, I think.
Sarr will go as well. He'll be gone. So he's sending Blaze. So yeah, he'll go. I think there's one or two others. So yeah, I worry in December. Like, I think it's like eight or 10 games in 20 days. It's madness. It's absolute madness.
I think if you can survive it and get through. Yeah, it does.
Are you looking at it there, Dave?
No, I was just saying that the fixture thing around Christmas just seems to get worse every year, piling more and more fixtures in, and that there's always a period where for a few weeks there will be games every day, games every 3 days. African Cup didn't help either, but yeah, it gets worse.
We just got to make haste while the sun shines.
There's no respite, and even if you look at the last season, going into, you know, the tours start like 3 or 4 weeks after the season finishes. So you don't get that kind of real break. And it's a lot of it is mental as well. And I guess.
So. Yeah. And next year you got a World Cup. Yeah. So how's the team going to do any transfer business when everyone's going to be playing at the World Cup?
Exactly. Exactly.
It'll be hard.
It will be. Fulham then played Wolves, Fulham winning 3-0. And then Wolves, obviously the manager's taken the brunt of that and gone.
Do you see the highlights of Wolves?
Were the highlights?
I watched our match today, and honestly, like, it was like watching a Sunday pub team. They're all trekking towards the ball, and then they've got players unmarked. They're just scooping the ball in, and there's a goal. They were so bad, so bad.
Yeah, it doesn't help when your player gets sent off either, sort of 30-odd minutes in, when you need the result as well.
Harsh red card or deserved? If you saw it.
I didn't see it, mate, but considering the stuff which has been, you know, not deemed a yellow card or whatever, or a red card at the moment, is crazy. I don't understand.
It seemed
again,
a bit
consistency,
harsh.
Consistency.
Yeah, definitely.
So Fulham 3 goals there as well. I'm up to watch Spurs Fulham in a couple of weeks at home.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I thought, you know what, it's the one I can sort of make with diaries and stuff like that. It's 8 o'clock on a Saturday, I think, as well. So it was like, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And I'm thinking, Fulham, we never play well against Fulham anyway. And now they've started to find a bit of form. I know Sessegnon's going to score against us as well. The sod.
Always.
Yeah, so that'll be a great time. But anyway, Forest went, well, they were at home against Man U, 2-2 draw. So they showed a bit of grit and came back into it, didn't they? After going a goal down, Forest. Gibbs White and then Savona, and Diallo scored a good goal to get that one as well. And was it Casemiro? Yeah, a header, wasn't it? I saw as well.
Yeah,
it was a bit controversial. Yeah. Not sure about that corner.
getting slightly better, aren't they, by the week, Man United?
Yeah, they are. I think they're still going to be... I think we talked about it maybe last pod with a Man United fan, although we have had quite a lot of Man United fans recently since they've been winning. I'll just put that out there again.
They come out of the woodwork, have they?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. At least you're brave enough to come on here, Dave, after a loss. Crikey.
Yeah, well...
Which leads us on to that loss. I obviously watched it. Dave, did you watch it as well?
I did, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, so...
Typical, didn't turn up, didn't it? Didn't turn up.
Yeah, frustrated as some of the key players there as well, like Van der Ven and Spence, obviously. A lot made of the blanking of the manager at the end as well. I took it as, I wouldn't want to talk to anybody either. I'd just push on and be absolutely peeved off that. There seems to be a drop in levels sometimes from some players to other players, and there's a real want to win. But again, we just, the final ball...
Collected though, isn't it?
Yeah.
One or two of them play bad, it brings the whole team down.
Yeah, exactly.
And they all don't turn up.
Yeah, and we haven't got that player, like we said before, the striker who can make something out of nothing and just get a goal and get a result. There's a lot of strikers in the Premier League I would take at Spurs currently. But
do you think that's the worst performance you've seen for a long time? Even like with Ange Ball, was that the worst performance? I watched it and it was...
No, it's better than Ange Ball, I think, because... At least they weren't like throwing everybody forward. Because when you used to watch it with Ange, you used to be able to see, what the hell are you doing? There's three players there, you know, about to run and break the offside line, and they're in. And that capitulation, which we had against Chelsea a season or so ago, that was terrible. This is much better. But I think that's the problem with us. We wanted someone more pragmatic. We've got that. Defensively in structure, we're much more solid, harder to break down. But creatively, we're not making that creative difference. We certainly haven't had the players. We don't, you know, we didn't really talk about European games on this one, but this obviously Spurs have played in midweek already at time of recording, and good result against a very, very poor team, Copenhagen, to be honest. But that should hopefully breed a little bit of confidence, and things were coming off for players like Simons in the 10 role. You know, he is not...
his best game.
Yeah, it was his best game. But also, he had no pressure. He had loads of time. They weren't pushing. They weren't pressing at all, Copenhagen. And I think that it's really hard to play against if you're not used to it. And also, if you are not strong enough yet for the physicality of the English game, because it's really physical and you've got to be strong.
Yeah.
So
I think there's that inconsistency. And a lot of those players, like Xavi Simons, he needs time, but there's too many players that need time to settle and get used to the Premier League. And it just doesn't help you now.
Yeah. How much time do you give? I guess, but well, we
Mattis Tell's another one.
Yeah, Tell's another one. You're
another
right.
Year.
Yeah, I think we've got a lot of players there for the future. But at the moment, it's just not kind of ticking. At Chelsea, we made them look better than they probably were, to be honest, as well, I thought. And for them to only get one goal against us the way we played just shows what they're lacking as well, regards to being a bit clinical. And I think he chops and change. I'm not sure he's ever really started a team the same every match either. He does change heck of a heck.
Well, that's because we normally pick up an injury per game as well, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, definitely.
And how Chelsea celebrated after the game as well, like they've won the FA Cup. That was a little bit cringe-worthy. How Chelsea celebrated. It's like,
There was biting it. And, you know, be careful what happened. You know, you do, and it does sometimes come around to bite you in the backside as well, doesn't it? So hopefully it does.
Definitely.
When we go to them, and we're quite, you know, we're playing away from home, we seem to have a little bit more freedom in the league, so who knows what's going to happen. And then the last game there on Saturday was Liverpool against Villa. Villa were in okay, good form, Liverpool up and down, Liverpool getting the result 2-0. It was just before half time, wasn't it, in injury time Salah scored, and then Gravenberch Birch 15 minutes into the second half there as well. It was
kind of routine performance,
yeah.
They needed it though, didn't they?
Saying that though, when Villa aren't a team where they're going to be amazing, you know, you've got massive creative players and stuff like that. They're just a well structured team, aren't they? For the manager,
they're quite poor though, and they were quite, apart from hitting the post, I think Rodgers hit the post early on, but apart from that, you know, obviously mistake by Martinez, but there wasn't anything else there. It was a totally different Villa side to what I think I've seen before. Didn't have anything again about them. So quite routine for Liverpool.
Yeah. Liverpool back on it, I suppose. At least they're, you know, they're picking up some points there as well. Sunday we had West Ham against Newcastle, which I actually thought would be a draw if Newcastle might win that, just because West Ham are in a bad place. And they did the business, really. 3-1. Yes, helped by own goal there as well. But they did go behind to Newcastle, and it was only 4 minutes in. So I think West Ham fans generally wait until the 15th to 20th minute before they start walking out nowadays. So a lot of them saw that.
They don't travel well, do they, Ali, the team? If you're a Newcastle fan, and most of them live in Newcastle, don't they? So that's a 6-7 hour journey, and they don't travel well at all.
No. And then they do get big support wherever they go as well. Yeah. Because obviously they're massively buying the team, and it's a proper weekend away, isn't it, for those fans?
They had Brighton 2 weeks ago, didn't they? Didn't they lose 3-1 there or 2-0 or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you think, that's even further for him to travel with.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to know. I mean, that will be their undoing, I guess, really, because actually, apart from that, at home, they are really competitive and they can probably beat most teams at home.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what happens there. And then Man City getting back on track at home, 3-1 against Bournemouth, and that was a good result. Bournemouth are playing well. Yes, it's away from home, but Haaland doing what Haaland does.
He's robotic, isn't he? Well, I was watching it with my eldest, and I was like, look, watch this, he's going to be gone. That header came out, he was stood in the D, and he was gone. Phenomenal.
Yeah, good balls for some of those as well. But, I mean, if you look at the goals Man City has scored, Holland has scored 13, nearest player near to him. Nunes, Foden, Cherki, there's all one goals. They're massively dependent on them, aren't they? Massively. Yeah. Hey, if you've got a good striker.
Yeah.
Earning his 500 grand a week.
Yeah, why not? It's got... I did like his chat regards to why he's taken off on a hat trick. That was good.
Oh, well, I missed that. What did he say?
I mean, he just wasn't that bothered, really. Oh well, just the way it is. Yeah. So it doesn't really. I mean, football looks easy to him. It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a different type of player than obviously a Kane or a Lamal or that kind of play. He hasn't got those skill sets, but what he does really well. And I, for some reason, something popped on the social medias the other day about the first time he got his first start with what was the team he was before in Germany? Is it
Borussia Dortmund?
Dortmund. The first time he came on when he was like really young, he just looked like a slimmed down version of what he is now. Exactly the same runs, powerful. Did exactly what he does now. Some player, and they're back on track.
Okay to score.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? It's your job, isn't it? So go and do that. Back on track, so it's pretty good. Monday night saw what I can only describe as a boring match, because I watched some of that. It was Sunderland at home against Everton. And yeah, and Dai, great goal. Gave him too much space to get the ball in. A great goal for Everton on 15. And then Xhaka on 46 got them back into it. And he's a good player, Xhaka, which is going to be interesting when we talk about later on about the matches coming up, because obviously Sunderland are playing Arsenal. So that's going to be an interesting one. Come on, Sunderland. You've always been my second.
Jamie went, didn't he? He was up there.
Was he up there? Oh, God.
Yeah. He was texting me saying, I'm just catching a train, Steve. I'm on my way up to Sunderland, Everton. I was like, well, what a great fixture that is.
Yeah. It's not one I would probably choose, because it had a draw all over it, didn't it, really? Just the start. But, I mean... at least there's a point, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, a point away, that's fine. Everton probably playing better at home anyway. Again, got a point out of it, I guess. Sunderland continue to just grind out results and get some points, don't they? They've been pretty
They're
good.
They're still up there, fourth at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fair play.
They are doing pretty well. They really are. Right, so that's the roundup of the football. Dave, let's talk about what you do in general, because a lot of people hear about investment and... buy-to-lets, and a lot of people are accidental buy-to-let landlords, aren't they? They have a property which it might be their flat, etc., and they end up renting it out because they meet someone else, and then they buy their home, etc., and they put it on the buy-to-let mortgage, or they're given something from probate in particular, where they end up just renting it out, and they're accidental landlords, I would call them. Some of them make differences and they actually get their funds out of there, and just what you do, obviously, and help them buy other things and build their portfolio. But what's your typical client that comes to you? Is it somebody, I guess it's a mix, isn't it, currently? Is somebody who has a bit of experience or brand
new? So we've got a mix of clients, some that are sort of quite large portfolio landlords that are still growing, 20 plus properties. We then obviously look to manage their remortgages as they come round, but they're always looking at next deals, where they can raise funds from, how they can fund the next deal, just to grow the portfolio. So that's sort of at one end. Some of those have been with us for 7, 8, 9 years, and we might have picked them up with one or two or no properties, and we've kind of grown with them and guided them through the financing as the portfolio gets bigger, because lenders will change, lending rules will change the more properties you have. And yeah, and we also get new investors, people coming to us that are looking to buy their first buy-to-let property and wanting to know how to do it, what sort of mortgages are available, whether they need to do refurbishments or bridging finance and stuff like that, really. So yeah, quite a range.
Do you get some, is there a sort of a different split of people who want to buy properties to flip, or are you in a, do you sometimes find yourself in a position where you're actually explaining to that person, actually, there's another way to make money out of this, and give them a better financial route to making money? Because ultimately, that's what it's about.
Yeah, always. I mean, our job isn't really to sit here as an order taker. You know, we look at what the client wants to achieve. I think we probably see less flips with our clients than we do sort of buy and hold. But it depends on the deal, doesn't it? You know, I've got a handful of clients in particular that are actively in the market all the time, and depending on what they've got in front of them, they'll make the decision on that as to whether they flip it or hold it. But yeah, probably predominantly buy and hold than flip at the moment.
Nice. Do you still get the people who, obviously, I mean, in the world of auction currently, do you must still get the people who come to you and say, help, I've just bought a property at auction, I don't know how to buy it, as in finance it. And by that time, obviously, it's the worst time for you as a for what you do, because you want to get the information out and actually find the best route and get the figures right for them to bid, but they've already bid and they've already bought it, exchanged it, etc.
Yeah.
How many do you get those people through, which
we
it's
do.
Crazy thinking that way, but it does happen, yeah?
Oh, it happens a lot. It happens way more than you think. I mean, to different levels, you know. Some people have done a degree of research on the property and what needs to be done, but not looked at the financing. Others have just got excited at auction, bid, and ended up buying it. But yeah, it obviously makes things a bit more frantic, a bit more fraught, a bit more rushed. I guess from our point of view, we deal with auction purchases quite a lot, so we know the process we need to guide them through. It's just making sure then it's finding the right option for them to get it through within the 28 days they've got to complete.
So auction is a route which a lot of your clients use because it's finite, etc., and it's done. But I guess you still do the normal conveyancing route as well, private treaty, I guess, as well, don't you? Or no?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a mix of you know, buyer agents from auctions, even off market deals that people find. Yeah, we pick them all up.
So, what's the sort of financial challenges then with buy to lets and funding, etc., as well? Because I do remember quite a few times where, amazingly, people have bought stuff at auction in my auctions, and then not realise the stamp duty, and that puts all their figures off, and they've not done their pre-research, or they have done, but totally forgot about the stamp duty, or how tax implicates them as well, I guess, really. So there's a few different sort of avenues there, isn't there?
There's loads to consider, but you're quite right with the stamp duty. You know, the surcharge was brought in a few years back at 3%. It's then gone up to, I think it's 5% now. Certainly new investors are not always aware of that if it's their first property. It's one of the things, obviously, we look to highlight as well. Those that have bought a few will know about it. There's tax as well. Should it be in a company? Should it be in their personal names? That's not one that we can answer. That's generally an accountancy tax driven question. So we would refer them on to speak to a tax advisor. And it's different from one person to the next, and different each property. You know, the more properties you stack up in your personal name, it pushes your income up further into the higher tax brackets. But yeah, it's subjective. It needs a second set of eyes. There's obviously difference in financing costs to consider as well. So whilst you might get a tax benefit by buying it in a company, your financing costs might be higher. So does one offset the other? So yeah, lots of moving parts.
Okay. And what about for yourself, your clients, do the majority of them use that income from a buy-to-let, for instance, as money for them? Or do they actually just put it all into buying sort of new property? Is it just a build and wealth sort of thing for a lot of people? Or is it actually just additional income? Because it's slightly different, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's got their own reason as to why they invest in property, and that's obviously one of the things we're keen to understand so we can help them achieve that. I've got clients that are full-time landlords, full-time portfolio landlords. They live off their property income. They've built it to a size where they're not relying on every penny, so they have money left over to reinvest into their properties and build again. We have others that don't touch a penny. They either build it up to pay down their debt, or they build it up to buy more, but they have other business or other income that they live off and don't use any of their property income. It depends on whether it's income for now, income for retirement, or legacy planning and handing down to your kids. Look, again, it's a wide mix.
And how do generally people just come to you if they are brand new? What's the general reason why they want to do it? Is it because they've got a wad of money somehow through inheritance, or they've sold their house, or they've sold a business sometimes and just want to do something with it, which is going to create wealth and assets, I guess? Is that usually the best way to do it? Or do you usually get people who are actually having to get money from different sources, as in remortgaging houses to pay for funds, that kind of thing?
Yeah, quite often, yeah. A client's had an inheritance, or they've built up some savings and they're just looking to make that money work better for them rather than leaving it in a savings account. Others will be looking at their home address, home property, look at the equity they've got, realise that could work better for them. So they look to draw some money out from their residence to then buy a buy-to-let. It's, ultimately people are doing it for wealth, whether that's capital growth and long-term wealth for the future or income for now, as a secondary sort of line of income to subsidise today's living costs, really.
Nice. And your clients, they buying down in the sort of southwest, or they buying all over the place?
Yeah,
or?
All over. I mean, naturally, because we're based in Plymouth, a lot of our clients are more sort of southwest based. But we've got clients down here that buy all over the country, and clients all over the country that buy down here. So, yeah, it's strategy specific. What works for the client? Where are those deals going to be? Can they get there, do the viewings, do the refurbs if they need to, and how they're going to manage them? So it's strategy-based more than anything else in terms of where that leads you.
Yeah, I guess with funding in particular, it's kind of led a little bit why on what they've learned themselves. So there's lots of courses you can do, lots of property associations and networking thing, which will push a certain avenue. Or you should look at HMOs, you should look at this. I guess that realistically, for when people speak to me about property and what they're after at auction, it kind of mirrors that side of it. And you know exactly what sort of networking or training module they're on in particular, whether it be, I'm not going to mention them actually. There's a few different out there. But I guess for you, you see the same sort of thing where they come to you and say, oh yeah, I really want to do commercial. And then you're like, well, okay, what do you know about commercial? Well, not really, but I've been told that actually that's the way to go. You know, it's commercial and then we could change it to resi and then we can make all this money. I guess sometimes it's just keeping people's feet on the ground, isn't it? And I guess a lot of the sums don't work out for a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk out there, whether it's from property investment courses where people are trying to sell the dream, or just social media or friends in the pub. You know, everyone will have been told something at some point, you can do this or you can do that. I guess sort of from my perspective, having been there and done it on the property investment side, and obviously understand the finance side as well, I can kind of marry that up. And yet sometimes we've got to rein people back in and say, you can't do this. It's not just a case of say you can't do this, but maybe explain the reasons why to them, because of X, Y, and Z. Or once we've got you to a certain size, it will unlock doors for different sorts of financing. In particular, HMOs. I mean, you can do an HMO as a first-time landlord, but your finance options are restricted. There's less lenders that will look at it. I mean, we would always suggest, you know, if you can get a couple of buy-to-lets under your belt first, that will put you in a much stronger position in terms of having a foundation there to get some income coming in and the experience as a landlord, and then maybe move on to blocks of flats or HMOs, and kind of as a natural progression and growth path through that, really.
Nice. Like it. Okay. And what would you say would be the best sort of course of action if somebody wanted to get into it? Obviously, you said about training courses and stuff like that. I mean, you guys obviously got a lot of insight, et cetera, as well. Is there an email, you know, they could join, sort of get a regular email thing going out,
there
that
is.
Kind of thing?
It's funny you say that.
What a lead. Unbelievable.
How did you know?
Well, because I've got it written down here, mate, that's why.
We're in the sort of process of finalising this, but like you said, we do get a lot of new investors coming to us, and I guess a lot of the time we're saying the same things over and over again, just to different people. And there's a lot of knowledge that a new investor won't necessarily have in terms of investment mortgages. They may understand residential, but they're two very different things. So we've put together sort of a 30-day email series, which guides you day by day. Email comes out from us through the initial steps of buy-to-let financing, and kind of takes you down that path of the starting steps, the strategy, what sort of finance options are available. We cover off auction purchases, we cover off bridging finance as well, and a bit about strategy, because like I said earlier, everything is, I guess, driven by what you want to get out of it. And different people will want different things from investing in property. It's not the same for everybody. Like I said, either long-term growth or income or for kids.
Yeah, I guess it's exposure to risk as well, isn't it, really? With something to do with investment in particular, because everything's a risk if you're buying property and it needs doing up, or it needs change around to maximise the income on it as well. The thing which I see quite often as an auction valuer is, and Steve, you can probably come in on this a little bit, is there are lots of firms who try and do everything. There's a few firms which get investment stuff in particular for estate agents, and that's all they do, and they kind of get it. The HMOs are the same, and lettings agents are the same as well. But a lot of the stuff I see when they've said, oh, ideal investment, I'm looking at it thinking, well, not at that price, because where's the profit? Where, how have they factored in how that person's going to buy it? It doesn't quite, they're expecting it, somebody to buy it at top level, even though it needs a bit of work, money spending on it to get it up to regs or to get the top value for rental in particular.
Yeah. And I mean, there's different aspects to that as well. You know, if someone has a pot of cash and they don't want to do anything, they want to be hands off, it may well be that they just drop their money into a couple of properties as deposits and they're buying stuff at full market value, but they get a good return. Whereas a lot of the investors that are growing and building the portfolio will want to be a bit more creative. They want to add value, refinance, pull money back out and go into another deal. So yeah, although that's not necessarily for everybody, buying that full market value done up property, you know, for some people that do have pots of cash, that might be better for them or not.
I think when I'm actually going and pricing stuff, when it needs some money spending on it, and also have to factor in to for auction to be as appealing as possible to every type of different buyer, I want to try and get a guy price which obviously people who are buying it with cash is great for them, but also people buying it with lending, and knowing that typically what is it 1% per month you would pay back on a lend, whatever you borrow
on a bridge. Yeah, it could be slightly higher, slightly lower, yeah, depending on what it is, but yeah, around that mark is an easy number to work with.
Yeah, that gives you a good indication then to actually factor in that cost in for pricing in particular. So, but it's a really interesting subject, and I think that you can really self-educate yourself on the internet in particular, but something like this, you need to speak to a professional who knows what it is straight away and also knows the lender, which will suit the, you as an individual, I guess, as well, because they're not all catch-all, are they?
No, I mean, obviously, in terms of bridging, there's tons of lenders out there that will offer various different sorts of bridging and different lengths of values. They'll cover your refurb costs, not just the purchase. There's all sorts of things. As someone sort of not dealing with that day in, day out, I wouldn't know where they would start or where they would look. You'd be Googling it and relying on Google's advice. Whereas, like you say, we know those niches and we know which lenders will do this scenario or that scenario, even how they're going to value it. You know, there's different ways properties can be valued. And the key is knowing what sort of valuation is going to get instructed half the time.
Yeah, and also I did a course a little while back on title splitting, and which I knew most of it anyway, but it's always good to say you've done a course on it as well. But one of the things I did pick up from there, a little nugget, was just about finance in particular, where you've bought something which is already on one freehold title and it's not been split. And realistically, beforehand, you had to go and get them titles to split to make them to value up. But now they would look at it as a whole and give you the split elements. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. So that sort of multi-unit block, which kind of is my strategy. I've got a few of those myself. And when I first started buying those, yeah, we title split them and valued them individually. But lenders came along and thought, well, actually, if we had to repossess it and sell it, we could just create leases on sale and sell it and get that value. So lenders would value it as individual leasehold units, when in fact it's a single freehold block. Less of a need to do that, but again, there's other strategies that will work better by splitting the titles.
Does that still work if it's say, for instance, you've got a house with five flats in, for instance, and one of them is tenanted?
Yeah.
And the rest of them are empty. Does that alter the value a little bit as well? Is it different, or does it need to be all the same?
No, I mean, it's commonplace, you know, certainly with a lot of purchases that it's not going to be fully tenanted. You know, we probably see more vacant than fully tenanted. That shouldn't alter the value. If you've got it fully let, then a valuer can look at your actual let income rather than market rent. But if it's a project, if it's something that needs work, probably less important on the way in on the purchase, but more important when you're refinancing it, when you've got the finished product, it's fully tenanted, you've got the income there, you can prove it.
Great. All right. Steve, do you have anything from your side you want to ask at all?
No, it's just encouraging to see that you're still busy with investors, because where we're at in the secondhand sort of resi market, I'm seeing less investors buying properties or adding to portfolios. I'm seeing more probably releasing their investment properties. So it's encouraging to see that they are still around. And
I think it's I guess what you're exposed to, you know, people always ask me, am I seeing landlords selling properties? The answer from where I'm sat is no, because they don't come back to me when they're selling their property. They'll go away and sell it. Some landlords will kind of strategically shuffle the deck. I've got one in particular at the moment. They're having a bit of a restructure. They've got a portfolio of, 12 or 14 student HMOs, varying sizes, all in Plymouth. They have got some small ones, 4 or 5 beds. They've got some bigger ones of 7 or 8 beds. They're now finding that the bigger ones are tougher to let. The smaller ones are going, and they're just looking to release one or two of the bigger ones that are not doing so well. They're struggling to fill, and then look to reinvest that back into smaller ones. So yeah, there are sales, but for different reasons, aren't they? Whether they're looking just to consolidate the debt or just change strategy.
I think they go through cycles as well, don't they, regards to what your tenants expect, what else is there available of a certain standard. And I'm not saying this is the case with your client there, but you kind of have to have it almost brand new every time a tenant moves in now, and offer them the latest stuff, because it's competition is immense for student accommodation.
Yeah. I mean, these clients, their properties are immaculate. You know, every year they go in and spend money on getting them back up to top grade. They get good income on them. I think it's just been, challenging in Plymouth with the student market for the larger HMOs. For them, maybe others don't find it so challenging, but for them, they'd rather shrink it down a bit. I guess the other thing with students is going to be the renters' rights bill that's coming in, and the changes to tenancy agreements, and not being able to take a group of tenants in on a 10 or 11 month fixed tenancy agreement.
Yeah, I think you're right. And also just about the 2 month notice there as well for ASTs. Well, I'm sure they'll change it and they'll be in the wording. I mean, the fact that possibly the way I've read it, you could actually sign a tenancy and then give them notice straight away and literally have pay for 2 months and that's it. So theoretically, it's a short term Airbnb. Although, and there's obviously a lot of stuff there, depending on where you read or you speak to, regards to Section 21. No photo eviction was being abolished. Well, actually, they were done because it's actually quite an easy way of doing it as well, I believe. So it was a process rather than having to force them to leave. Well, it's just a process. You had to do it. And a lot of people have to have an eviction notice before they can get housed by the council in particular. So, you know, it's really difficult, isn't it?
They are difficult, those ones, because they won't leave when the notice is up, and you'll have to go through the motions of taking them to court, getting a court hearing, and you know, it just doesn't help a landlord who are there providing homes for people at the end of the day.
Yeah. I think probably next year, and just speaking on the auction side of it, I mean, probably see more portfolio landlords looking to offload the whole portfolio or maybe split them up to maximise.
Yeah.
But you get that anyway because age comes into it. People retire. Yeah. Actually, you've had enough now. And when I started, it was like this, but now it's like this. No different to lots of businesses, you know, financial, estate agency, even auctions as well. Legislation changes, and you come to a point where you're like, oh, why am I spending so much time on this when I just want to help someone sell a property? I guess it comes down to that as well. But, you know, the good agents always and good companies always do good stuff, don't they? So
yeah, absolutely. And going back on what you said there about portfolio landlords selling as they get older, that may well be someone's strategy there as well. Build the portfolio when they retire, sell it, take the money.
Maximise. Yeah. Definitely. It makes sense, doesn't it? Definitely do. What am I doing this for, eh? Well, I should be out there buying properties. My goodness. Okay, let's...
Paddleboard courts is what I've come across. There's a lot of people releasing money and buying paddleboards, particularly businessmen and companies. The paddleboard has gone through the roof.
Wow. And that and mobile coffee little things, getting a franchise. Comes up on my LinkedIn and you're like, oh, maybe I'll just spend a day at the beach, get someone to look after the coffee thing, do a little paddle thing. Oh, that's the life. And then you look outside. Yeah, you look outside in December when it's raining. Maybe it's not the place for that. You know, we're not abroad, are we?
No, I'm a
pen pusher. Fantastic. Cheers for that, Dave. That's really, really interesting. We'll put the links to the two things which you're offering there on the show notes as well.
Two things there, yeah. There's the 30-day email course, which is for new investors looking to get in or people with property portfolios that want to understand the financing side of it a bit more. It's about putting out a bit of value and helping people with that, really. There's no cost to it. We're not selling a course out the back of it. We don't do that. But there's also a link I've sent you for our weekly Property Investor Insights newsletter. So we email out every week just with hints and tips and case studies and anything really that will help people along with their property investment journey.
I'm all about knowledge, and the more knowledge you have, just the better rounded individual you can be in a professional as well. Not to advise, but just to know the ins and outs and know somebody who knows that sort of stuff like yourself. So I will definitely be going on there and registering later on. No problem at all.
Wonderful, thank you.
Good, good. So, football this weekend. We have got some cracking matches, not apart from the first match of the day, which is the 12:30 kickoff. Mighty Spurs at home against Manchester United. It's a rerun, the chance for revenge.
I'm not even going to see it. It clashes with my kids' football, so I'll have to catch it later.
I remember those days. Yeah. Well, this is what you've got mobile phones for.
Yeah.
Don't cheer too loudly when we go 3-0 up. That's yeah. the key. As if. What were you thinking on this then? Spurs are home. We've had a good result midweek. Yes, I know it was against a poor team, like I said. United, okay, they're up and down, pretty much like us, really. Realistically, we're quite similar in consistency, I think, a little bit. Although they've got better strikers than us. They've got people who can put the ball in, and that might be the difference. Our person who puts the ball in the net has to run through everybody else from the defence, and he's called...
Top scorer.
Yeah, he is top scorer, Mickey van der Ven, and that's... Yeah,
what a goal that was.
It was a great goal. Another Puskás Award on our way, hopefully.
Yeah.
But in saying that... We need some players to step up and start contributing goal-wise, or else we're going to be mid-table, you know, fighting out with Palace. That's a little dig, Steve.
Whatever.
It's just Wolf of Ducks back, that one. I think that it's going to be... I'm going to go for Spurs win. Solid. 2-1. There we go. What do you think?
I went for a draw. I've gone 2-2.
2-2.
Yeah. I was going
to
say.
I'd like to think Spurs can win, but it's at home. And United have found a little bit of better form than they had earlier in the season. A draw.
Nice.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say the same thing. I could say a 2-2 draw.
All I went for.
Brilliant. Okay, we shall see. Come on, you Spurs. Let's get going.
Come on. Prove me wrong.
Prove me wrong. Yeah, again, you've been saying that so much in life. I think we're going to lose. Prove me wrong, Spurs. Come on. Oh, it's happened again. When I bump into you, Dave, in the hallway at work, I can say, you're right, mate? Oh, no. Shit, wasn't
depends
it?
Depends on the result of the weekend, wasn't it?
Okay, Everton versus Fulham. Everton at home. Fulham found a little bit of form in the last couple of games. Everton, though, they're resilient. They're better at home. This, again, could be a draw, I think. I'm going to go for a 1-1.
Yeah, I was going to say a draw as well. I think they're evenly matched.
They are.
No, I've pushed it out for 2-1 to Everton on that one.
2-1 to Everton. That could quite feasible. They, you know, is Ndai, is he injured? Is he out? Do you know?
I don't know.
Where's our Everton man when we want him? Good Lord.
I know. I'm sure he knows.
But they're close in the table, aren't they? 14th, 15th point between them.
Yeah, it's going to be very close. There seems to be a lot of draws recently. West Ham at home against Burnley. I think that West Ham should continue their run. I think it might be... I don't like saying that they won't concede because I think they are looking very vulnerable. Burnley, maybe it's only 2-1 to West Ham. The 2-1. There we go. Put it out there. What do you reckon?
I went 1-0 Burnley on that one.
Have you? Away.
Yeah. Again, no, they're close together. 17th, 18th.
Yeah. Again, there's a goal in it. There is a goal in it. If
I go 2-2.
2-2 draw. Whoa, high scoring.
Yeah.
Oof. So this is going to be an interesting match, the next match. 5:30 kickoff. Sunderland at home against Arsenal. What are we reckoning here?
I've gone a bit brave on this and I've gone a bit bold. I'd love to say a Sunderland win, but I've gone 2-2 again on this one as well.
2-2.
2-2, yeah. There's goals in it. Sunderland are riding high.
Steve's going to get Arsenal win.
Deal a draw.
Yeah, I'm fluctuating between 0-0. Arsenal go all out and go 2-0 win. I can't make my mind up. I'm going to go 2-0 Arsenal. Yeah,
Arsenal do like 2-0, don't they? They've had a.
I'm going to go controversially. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Sunderland.
Here we go. Of course you are.
Xhaka scoring in the 92nd minute.
What are the chances, Chris?
I'll take all that. Right.
Seriously, though, I think it's going to be a 1-0 or 2-0 win to Arsenal as well. But I would love it. Kevin Keegan fashion. I would love it. Just love it if Sunderland got that result and Xhaka was the one to score. Okay, late kickoff. Chelsea at home against Wolves. Well, Chelsea will win that, won't they? I think Wolves aren't.
3-0.
Yeah, I think it's going to be. Once they get the flow, if they give them space, they've got some technically gifted players. What do you think, Dave?
2-0. Yeah, 2-0 Chelsea.
2-0.
You see, they're after Gary O'Neill again.
It doesn't make any sense. You wouldn't go back, would you? If you're Gary O'Neill?
Well, no, he refused. And I'm glad he did refuse because I don't know why he would go back. It's in a worse position it was than you when you got sacked. And that team, they've got nothing about them. So why would you go back?
Well, he had Cunha, didn't he, up front?
Yeah, yeah. He lost Cunha. Max Kilman's gone to West Ham. It worked out well. I just couldn't understand that at all. Now they're all about Robbie Keane.
Well, Robbie Keane was linked with the Celtic drop, and he's obviously played like three games up there on loan or whatever.
Whether it's a rumour or something on Sports Bible on Facebook or whatever, but I heard that Robbie Keane actually applied for the job.
But he did play for Wolves, didn't he, Keane?
Yeah, he started there.
I think that's not a bad shout, and I think he'll get it, because I'm not sure people... I think that's the level.
Interesting stat on Wolves. They are the only team in the top four leagues that have not won a game yet this season.
Yeah, I saw that.
Even over Plymouth Argyle? Crikey.
Yeah, I think they did win one, maybe two.
Yeah.
They fluked a couple.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, there'll be an interesting Saturday, certainly. Sunday, we've got Villa against Bournemouth. So Villa at home against Bournemouth. Villa need to find something. They are better at home. Bournemouth obviously played away last week, lost that.
That's tricky, that fixture.
That's another tricky one. It's hard to put your finger on a definitive score, although I think that it's going to be 1-0 to Bournemouth.
I went the other way. I went 1-0 Villa.
Mm. I'll go 1-1.
All bets covered, yeah.
Again, we don't condone betting, but talk to them later.
Okay.
Brentford against Newcastle. Brentford at home, Newcastle away. We've always said Newcastle don't travel very well. Brentford had a bad result the other week away to Palace, and I think that Brentford will get a result here as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a 2-1.
I would 100% agree with that. That's exactly what I was going to say. 2-1 Brentford.
I went for 2-2 draw again. 2-2 is my flavour of the week, I think.
And that, crikey, next match, Palace at home against Brighton. Love that matchup. Love it.
Do you know what? I got offered a ticket for this, and it's my wife's 50th a week Saturday. And this weekend, she's being taken out by the girls, so I can't go, which I'm gutted about. It'll be feisty, competitive. Did a double over them last year. Happy days. What do I think? It'll either be a draw or a sneaky 1-0 win. Let's go 1-0 Palace.
Okay. Nice. Dave, what do you think?
I probably shouldn't say this. I shouldn't upset the host, really, should I? But I went 2-1 to Brighton.
Dave.
It's on.
I know. Sorry.
What is that list of investors I have? We need to get rid of that.
Sorry, I meant Palace. Backtrack.
Yeah, it's gone. It's never make the final cut. Don't you worry.
God.
I think that it's going to be 1-1. There we go.
Yeah, I can see it being like a draw.
Be feisty, and the emotions will be running high. Forest then. At home against Leeds. Leeds away from home aren't as good at home. Forest, they've got some, you know, they're sounding like a little bit backbone, haven't they, recently? I'm going for a Forest win 1-0.
I was going to say Forest 2-0.
No, I went for the 1-0 draw on this one.
We are covering all bases here. This is like, this wasn't pre-planned, by the way. And then we've got a match which could be really pivotal for both teams, to be honest, this early in the season. City at home against Liverpool. The finding a bit of traction, finding a bit of form, and kind of looking like he's back to some kind of form. Holland playing well. Foden needs to play well because it's the England squad, isn't it, for the World Cup after this one. So he needs to get back in the frame a little bit better. Liverpool, obviously had a good result last weekend. They need to get something from it as well. I'm going to go for 2-2 draw.
See, that was my shout. My favourite score of the week was 2-2.
Yeah.
Gina, our broker here, is a Liverpool fan, and she has assured me there'll be a 90-plus something minute winner for Liverpool to make it 3-2.
3-2?
3-2 Liverpool, yeah.
It's going to be...
a late winner. 95-minute winner.
I can see that. Steve, you're stuck on this one.
This is the 4:30 kickoff, is it? Nice.
Is that what you'd be watching?
Yeah. But I thought we'd get back from Exeter. 1-1.
Yeah, so we've got 1-1, 2-2, and a 3-2 win for Liverpool in the 93rd.
Fifth minute.
Fergie time. Like it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, we shall see what happens there. That is great. That pretty much rounds it up, guys. Today's podcast. Thanks so much again, Dave, for joining us today.
No, thanks for having me.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Property Premier League. I've been your host, Chris Mervin, ably assisted by Steve Green. Thanks, Steve. Welcome back, buddy.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
We'll be back next Friday with more insights and debates from the world of property and the beautiful game. They think it's all over? Well, you know the rest.